It's time for your afternoon praise on Maranatha Drive on Adventist World Radio, powered by SID Media.
Lovely sounds are there coming from Kirk Willem. I see you. That's the name of the song right there. At exactly 10 minutes after the hour, 5 o'clock here on AWR. And of course, 073-470-3520 is the number. On the line, we're joined by Namuma Mulindi. Namuma, good afternoon to you.
Good afternoon, and thank you for having me.
Thank you so much, and thank you for joining us. Namuma Mulindi from Sonke Gender Justice, one of the people who are making work there. We are actually starting our 16 days of activism against gender-based violence. And catching our eye is an article that you penned that was in the media, relating the gender-based violence and femicide to, of course, alcohol. I thought that was quite an interesting one. So I do want us to actually, look at that because the article actually says alcohol, a deadly accelerant, which actually you penned so very well, a quite very well-researched article there. So what is the effect of alcohol on gender-based violence and femicide?
Thank you for the compliment and the affirmation. Yes, I think the key word is it's an accelerant. That's the thing we need to remember. I think one of the things we don't realize is the impact alcohol-related intimate interpersonal violence cases that we actually have in the country. I was surprised myself conducting research to find out, having read other research papers, that there's an prior to COVID, there was an admittance of 47,000 plus, about 47,000 plus cases per week. And of those, 17,000 were alcohol-related. And its majority of those that interpersonal violence was men violating women. And if there's one thing COVID did, it really portrayed the stark reality that when there was a tough lockdown and there was no alcohol sales, cases reduced to 15,000 per week. And the alcohol-related cases, incidents, which means the IPV and the accidents, motor vehicle accidents, were 10,250 less. So it's interesting that we haven't actually seen, taken down to actually see that if only 17% of people in South Africa have medical aid, then the rest of the percentage is relying on the public health care system. What pull does this have on the health care system? And so a lot of us don't sit down to actually see that, wait a minute, the more alcohol violence there is, the more cases, the more the dependence on the public health care system, which, as we know, is very strained.
Man, it's actually a whooping percentage there drop, in terms of all those trauma situations in hospitals there. Quite enlightening, I must say. Now, you write in the article on the economic impact of GBV on the economy. Please expand on this and how the two relate, if at all.
So, again, we are going back to the healthcare system. How much of the fiscus, how much of the money in South Africa is being directed towards health, and a lot more has to be directed because there is this IPV cases. Intimate interpersonal violence cases. So that's one of the driving factors that we need to look at. Another thing we also need to bear in mind is the court system, the court system, the prison system, all of those are affected, and all of those to run cost money. And so I was also surprised by the report from KPMG for 2012-2013 saying that the ongoing violence against women and children and girl children was costing about $28.4 billion to the state.
I see. So it costs the state in terms of the hospital bill that the state has to carry?
Yes. We're talking about the hospital bill. We are talking about court We're talking about prisons.
I see.
All those which we get money from national government are affected.
Ah, now it makes sense. Now, there's been calls over the last couple of years to ban alcohol advertising. At some point, there's been, focus groups and activists calling on this precisely because of the impact that it has on influencing the young people to start consuming alcohol. What is your view on the alcohol advertisements?
Look, if I had my way, ban it altogether. Because we're looking at a situation where the manner in which the alcohol ads are done, drinking is cool, drinking is fun, drinking means you have achieved a certain level of status depending on the alcohol that is being marketed. And youth who are impressionable are seeing these advertisements and they want to be cool, they want to be fun, they want to be have that status. You know, if you think about it, in our youth days, we would celebrate and say things like, oh my God, I got so hammered. And those of you who were able to get hammered under the radar, parents didn't know, were the cool kids in school, which is dangerous. I mean, there have been cases in some of the townships. I recall a case where youth, high school students, had been drinking together, and it was two boys and a girl. And for some reason, when they left the Shabin they had been drinking at, the two boys turned on their fellow classmate, raped her, and gouged her eyes out. Get? So there's this thing that we need to understand. This advertising and making it cool and normalizing the alcohol drinking, making it cool puts the youth in risque behavior. We're getting involved in things that they don't understand. Here we have children who got pregnant and, you know, weren't ready, not psychologically ready, not physiologically ready. But this is the situation you find yourself. The number of youth who've gotten raped as a result, raped by their peers. Sometimes it's difficult to prove. Other times there's an issue of shame. So, you know, a person doesn't want to come forward because they're already blaming themselves. So you see, there's this whole cyclical thing that is going on. And I think it's time we actually stood, you know, just took a moment to take stock. What is the impact this is having on our youth? I mean, the age drinking has reduced, and it doesn't matter if you now say, okay, let's change the drinking age to 21. What is happening is the drinking age is 18, but we are having a challenge of 13, 14, 15-year-olds drinking.
Consuming alcohol. Case in point, the Enyobeni Tavern issue.
Right there, that it is. And, you know, like, now is the trickiest time. It's interesting that we gear towards 16 days of activism, starting from the 25th of November, but it's also the season for KD Dembabo. Again, you see, the advertising that goes off, there's a high drive of advertising that goes off at this time. And all of it, it's, you know, the muscular dude, the beautiful girl, and this is how they relate, or the guys hanging out in a circle like this, and, you know, all these advertisements that just make alcohol look so cool.
It's a dangerous thing. I don't know, how do we, counter this as a nation and societies, Namuma? Because, I mean, people have gotten to drink alcohol simply because of those advertisements, you know, because they would make it as though you have achieved a particular status in life. That's why you would have to drink a certain type of alcohol, which unfortunately is deadly for young people. I don't know. So how do we do it? How do we partner with organizations like yourselves to make sure that at the end of the day, what we have to achieve is that the femicide and gender-based violence has to be curbed. And if alcohol plays a role, it means that our societies really must hold hands, different groupings, religious groupings, social groupings, etc. All of us, hands on the deck. I don't know how you see that.
Look, that makes perfect sense. And if I could just say thank you for having me on your show, because this is where it starts. Remember, another thing, a lot of the organizations that are coming up against the alcohol issues that we have, or rather highlighting the alcohol problem we have in the country, a lot of them rely on alcohol funding. And you're going up against the liquor industry that has its arsenal set aside specifically for advertising. So it's one of those where even when you want to get your message across, you need to start looking at what are my resources in order to go forward. So it's great to have a platform, you know, on radio, and you're hoping that community-based groups are hearing, and that can actually start spark a conversation, and can we bring some sort of wildfire into this to actually have people passionate about the cause?
Quite important, I must say, because all of us have got to be engaged. This, I read a report a couple of months ago saying that, you know, looking at the statistics of heavy drinkers across the world, and I think South Africa was right there among the top five, which I think got me very worrisome. And it actually was saying South African women in particular were much more heavier drinkers than you would find anywhere across the world. So you find that this is a big problem, and it's not going to end if all of us don't hold hands, because at the end of the day, we've got to protect the vulnerable.
It's true. It's true. Look, even when I looked at the stats, I thought, how? But when you sit down and you think about it, there's actually quite a lot of alcohol consumption, but surprisingly, it's not necessarily the vast majority of South Africans who are partakers of alcohol. The percentage is actually small, but the issue is the level of binge drinking.
Yeah, the binge drinking. Which is a problem.
And remember, with youth, that's where they sit, because it's in the binge drinking that you earn your stripes.
Yeah. Now, you state in the article that alcohol regulation is not homogeneous. Please expand on this.
So the constitution allows for the regulation of alcohol, enables provinces to establish policy within their areas, within their specific constituents, for the regulation of liquor. And so the problem with that, because there is no national specific legislation, each province can come up with their own policy. So you find, for instance, the Eastern Cape Liquor Act of 2003 says you can't apply for a liquor license if you're within 100 meters of a school. The Gauteng Liquor Act, on the other hand, says you can't apply if you're within 500 meters or more. You're not allowed to apply. And then Natal has the same 500 policy. You see the Northwest says 1 kilometer of a school in a rural area and 500 in an urban area. You know, Northern Cape says the location of the proposed premises in regards to its proximity to an institution, basically not necessarily giving a definitive figure, but then just saying we should be the liquor board should consider the location of the school premises with regards to proximity to an institution of learning. So it's that we have, you know, in the Western Cape, schools are allowed to sell alcohol on their premises in order to raise funds, you know. So we have that sort of situation. And now this is the thing. For instance, if you say in the Western Cape, schools are allowed to sell alcohol in order to raise funds, what happens in the rural Western Cape schools and, you know, the densely populated schools where issues of GBV are predominant, right? Have you really helped the students? We were representing in Parliament on the basic education bill recently, fighting against the clause allowing all schools to sell alcohol in order to raise funds. Because we were saying, what happens in our rural schools? Who's going to regulate and make sure that the alcohol drinking is controlled? How do we do that? You know, what does it look like? So this lack of homogeneousness is... the lack of homogeneity has an impact on how alcohol is regulated in different areas and also could create potential problems.
Yeah, very important point you make there, I must say. Now, lastly, we're looking at the alcohol GBV nexus, and you make a passionate plea in the article that that this relationship can no longer be ignored, you know, if government is to make strides in the addressing of the GBV femicide issue. How should government at least take some steps in this regard?
Look, there's actually a liquor policy that to date has not been passed, and we don't understand why government is slow on its feet to actually pass this liquor policy. The Pillar 3 of the National Strategic Plan on Gender-Based Violence and Femicide actually talks about the passing of GBV laws. And by definition, or rather by looking at the stats and the relationship between alcohol and gender-based violence, I will say alcohol policy is indeed GBV legislation. But I guess there is that reluctance on government side because there is, you know, certain financial changes that will occur with a limitation in advertising. And now we're thinking there's a politics to it, and that politics doesn't actually relate to the experiences of people on the ground.
Mm.
And that's part of the challenge. So I think mine would just be to say, you know, government needs to push for that national policy to stop sitting and actually pass legislation that will make it homogeneous throughout the country will give us an opportunity to actually make submissions and engage on the liquor policy.
It's actually quite important because if we do not do this, Namuma, and I agree with you largely, if we don't, address this as a nation and as all interest groups, I'm saying confidently here today that our nation is going to be given to alcohol and there can never be progress in such a situation.
This is true. A child who becomes an alcoholic at 16, by the time you enable them to walk out of that challenge, to walk out of that alcohol addiction so they can actually begin their life, you have shaved years off their life.
Mm.
That's if they don't end up finding themselves in risky conditions where somebody has gotten a pregnancy that they weren't prepared for.
Mm.
Now you have a child raising a child. So, yes. The drive needs to be hard. We need to amplify our voices. You know, when we are talking about communities coming together, you know, like I said, I appreciate your radio station for having me on to discuss this issue so that we can have a place to actually say, hey, are you aware that this is what is actually happening?
Very important. Well, Namuma Malindi, I do want to thank you so much. It's actually Mulindi. Namuma Mulindi, thank you so much for joining us from Sonke Gender Justice. Any things that are planned out as we start this 16 days of activism against gender-based violence?
Various organizations are doing different things. You know, there's drives to actually educate people on the National Strategic Plan.
Mm-hmm.
There's drives, I think the Department of Women and Youth is actually launching something tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
So it would be great if we can actually get involved in these different things that are happening. Either if it's to get some training on GBV,
mm-hmm.
to understand where we've come, how far we've come in GBV policy. A lot of it is going to take our own initiatives to go out there and find out what are the grassroots organizations that are doing something. You know, for instance, for me in Sonke, my role is to get on whatever radio station, send out whatever article I can to keep on trumping up attention towards the 16 days of activism. So mine is to say, do your part in a small way. And if you don't have an idea, there's different organizations that you can partner with. Yes, please just try and find those.
Beautiful. Well, I do want to thank you so much definitely for your time and for joining us here on AWR. May you have a blessed afternoon.
Thank you for having me, Zama.
Thank you.
Bye.
It's time for your afternoon praise on Maranatha Drive on Adventist World Radio, powered by SID Media.